From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, here we are on a cold winter's evening, past the darkest day just, here in Hobart, and you, if you've joined us here, you are listening to The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. I am Mark.
I'm Garth.
I'm joined by Garth, and Leon's not here tonight.
No, he couldn't be bothered. Or he's working.
Or he's working, or something like that. That's right. But look, before we get into it tonight, because we've got lots of cover, to cover, where last week we talked about the Kennerspiel des Jahres, the German gamers, game connoisseurs, game slightly more advanced game award.
For those in the know.
That's right. This week we're going to talk about the big one, the Spiel des Jahres, the German Game of the Year, the Academy Award of Games, Das Academy Award of Games for Germans.
But it is kleiner or petite. They are all very small. They're not big.
Well, sometimes they're big games, but it's very much aimed at German families who might be looking for something to do one day and don't really know about our world of gaming, which we spend a lot of time talking about on this show. If you're tuning in for the first time, this is what we're talking all about: board games, card games. Sometimes we talk about role-playing and other crazy, nerdy things.
Not tonight, though. No. It's all board games all the time from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Edge Radio.
No, tonight. That's right. But before we get into that, I just want to mention, Garth.
Oh, hello. You want to mention me? That's
no,
so
no.
Sweet.
I want to mention to let our listeners know. Now, I did do a post on our Facebook page, but sometimes people don't see that. Of course, we're going to be talking about some of what happened at Bordercon here because it's our favourite 4 days of gaming and so much gaming happened. However, we were very, very, very fortunate this year.
Surely Leon should tell this story because it happened on the Sunday.
When he wasn't there. So Garth and I are sitting across a table. We were partway through a game of, what's it called, Space Commander?
Space Corps!
That's right, GMT game. And when it was time for the big charity raffle. The charity raffle is huge at Bordercon.
1 p.m. every Sunday at Bordercon. Always, be there and be square.
Always some amazing prizes, great big boxes, games with lots of expansions. Lots of people spend money. And, of course, it's for a great cause. And this year, the cause was the McGrath Foundation, and in particular raising money for a metastatic breast cancer nurse. I think they want to fund the nurse for 3 years. And BGG attendee, Bordercon attendee, and listener to the show, Brian, got up and told the story of what had happened with his wife, her and his experience with the McGrath Foundation being supported by the metastatic breast care nurse, and how he talked about how it extended her lifespan, where she was expected to live less than 18 months and she ended up lasting well over 3 years, I seem to remember.
Which is remarkable.
Yeah.
Because all of us sort of go around in a daze of reality, not expecting life to turn itself completely upside down at a moment's notice. So the work that the McGrath Foundation, these metastatic breast cancer nurses do, is incredible. And that's one of the stories that Brian mentioned, is that on any given year, these nurses are looking after potentially 150 people. And he just relayed very succinctly that if every one of them had the same extension of life that his wife did, from 18 months to 3 years, that is a huge amount of extra life every single year that they're giving to loved ones and partners and themselves. It's a remarkable achievement.
Anyway, so in the raffle, Bordercon raised $7,500 towards that very, very worthwhile charity. So that was fantastic. But then come the end of the raffle, and we were sort of, oh, okay, you know, we've had the raffle, we've had the charity, we've heard the story, we've had a few tears.
Oh,
it was a tearjerker.
And I won part of the raffle.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, you won.
I got to collect Giant Azul, which may be one of the few copies in Australia.
Yep, it was pretty cool. And people may have seen our photos on Instagram of Giant Azul. It's amazing. Anyway, we were sitting there sort of, okay, we get back to our game now. And then Neil, one of the organisers from the committee, talked about they had something else to announce.
They sure did.
Which was the inaugural BorderCon Community Grant to a group or an organisation or some conglomeration of people who basically make a contribution to the community of board gaming in Australia, and they wanted to recognise that.
He did, and I also think he said that they might have been, you know, incredibly good-looking.
I'm not sure.
Personality through the roof.
Yeah.
People you want to be friends with.
Cut to the chase. Garth and I are sitting there when Neil announced that the Dice Men Cometh were the inaugural choice for the BorderCon Community Grant. And we both did a double take.
Yeah. You know that one where you just go, what?
Yeah, yeah. We were really taken aback. We had no idea. People were going, who?
No, we were going, who? No, they weren't.
Anyway, we were so honoured. We had to wake up Leon and get him to come back to the hall to tell him all about it.
It took him 4 hours to move the 50 metres from his room to the conference
room. So anyway, look, we were so flattered. The BorderCon Community Grant is a grant of $500. And, of course, our minds were racing with what can we do? We can put it towards our trip to Essen and all these other things. But then after a bit of thought, Garth, you and I pretty much came to the same conclusion straight away, which is no matter what value we can create from that $500, having just listened to that incredible story of what the metastatic breast care nurses create, the clear and obvious choice for us was to donate that $500 back to the charity.
Absolutely. And just through circumstance, I ended up talking to Brian and found out he was a listener during the course of the BorderCon weekend. So it was an absolute no-brainer that, yes, while that money is very much appreciated on behalf of the Dice Men Cometh, it doesn't pale in comparison to what it can do for just an extra couple of days of employment for a metastatic breast cancer nurse. So it's so much more beneficial than getting a couple of people who love board gaming to another convention or on one other plane. So, look, we were stoked and continue to be really humbled by the fact that we were the inaugural winners of this BorderCon grant. We love BorderCon. You've been going for about 150 years and Leon and I have been going for four or five.
I think it was my seventh, but just to be, I guess, to be recognised by your own hobby that you make a significant contribution, I was flattered, I was so honoured. As I said, we really did do a double take.
Yeah.
So let's say again, thank you so much to the BorderCon committee and everyone at BorderCon that make it such an amazing event.
Exactly.
Certainly we didn't want to create a precedent that anyone who might receive it in the future has to donate it back, of course, but the challenge is there.
No, it's not. And in keeping with that, we ourselves are living the theme because Leon, again, is not here. So he's taking the day off instead of talking about this wonderful achievement and wonderful community that we're a part of. So, look, we should really stop this gas bagging, throw to a song and come back because tonight we are talking all things Spiel des Jahres. We are going to talk about arguably the game of the year for some people, maybe not us, but we're going to talk about it, one of the nominees for the Spiel des Jahres. That'll lead us very nicely into who are the nominees for the Spiel des Jahres, followed by very succinctly, who's going to win.
Yeah, we're going to do our little half-assed voting again and see how we go. Anyway, we'll be back shortly to talk all about them games.
I'm John from Queensland. You're listening to the Dice Men Cometh, and maybe one day Leon will win a game.
There we go. That great Perth band Jebediah from a few years back now with Leaving Home here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, Mark and Garth tonight here talking to you about board games. And the first game we're going to talk about, well, we did mention it a little bit last week when we talked about the Kenner Spiel Award because it is one of the nominees. We did play it at BorderCon. We thought we better do it justice, maybe more justice than it deserves, and talk about it this week. And that is Carpe Diem.
Seize the day!
Seize the day by Stefan Feld.
Indeed.
Yes.
So, look, this is in, again, the gamer's game. Those who are in the know, the more sophisticated type of games, think you, want to work a little bit harder for your enjoyment game category. which includes Wingspan and Detective. Mm. But Carpe Diem is the one game that we haven't talked about yet, and in fact it was the last game that you played out of the Kennerspiel nominees, Mark.
Yes.
So what is it, who is it, and why do we care? Well, it's a Steffenfeld game. Probably that is the big thing about this game. It comes in a really normal-sized, very grey box containing very generic characters who are arguably looking out into distance like so many Euros before them.
Yep.
So let's all take a moment and pretend to stare out into the distance. There you go. So Steffenfeld, designer of...
Well, look, most,
let's just say a million games.
I was going to say, most people would put The Castles of Burgundy right up there as one of his best.
Absolutely.
Me personally, I have a real soft spot for Notre Dame because it was one of the sort of early full-on Euro games I played when I came into the hobby.
Yeah, but you've got Trajan, you've got Bora Bora, you've got Bruges, you've got Macau. Thank you. Amerigo Aquasphere, which I know good friends of the show and good friends of the Dice Men, Joe and Cam and Rachel... we'll always get together and play.
Yes.
Get frustrated and exhilarated by. But this game, Carpe Diem, which is Kennerspiel nominated, needs to be discussed. Because it looks bad. And you pick it up and it feels bad. And it looks cheap and it feels cheap because it is every form of cut and paste, clippy, arty, bog standard Euro. Nothing uniqueness about
it. Well, hang on, Garth. Hang on. Let's take a step back. It is in your very standard Ravensburger Alia medium-sized box.
It's grey.
Yes, it's sort of grey, but that's because it's stone and it's harking back to Roman times where stone was a thing.
All right.
And all so right. Many things were stone.
Okay, well, let me go back then.
Yeah, okay.
Because if you've ever wanted to be a Roman patrician... trying to get richer than your fellow Roman patricians, then maybe this game could be for you.
How do you do that?
Because everyone's being a Roman patrician, and the way you're going to do that, Mark, is by being given your own individual player board, which is very boring because you haven't done anything yet. You haven't built anything. So you've got this lovely brown square in front of you.
You've got like the outside of a jigsaw.
Correct. But on the outside of that jigsaw, you will have four green walls. And those four green walls will not be the same every single time because they're all modular and they'll all connect together and you might have a series of other bits and pieces that go along with that to maybe spark your interest or to just give the game a little bit more replayability. So you'll each have your little player board. Then you'll have the central board or the central market, which will have a whole bunch of cards on it which will be used for in-between round scoring. But the main feature of this is going to be essentially a pentagram of movement to get tiles.
Yeah, so you've got groups of sets of four tiles and you basically have a little...
meeple.
Patrician, I guess, meeple, that you, when you choose from one lot of tiles, you then follow one of the...
It's a seven-pointed star.
Heptagrammical lines.
So it's not
that you trace along in a sort of a Suro type way where you have to follow the path. So you've got a limited choice of which tiles you can go and choose.
Correct.
Although when there are empty spaces, you can sort of bounce from one to another. But yeah, so you're limited in the tile you can choose next. Then obviously you need to then think about, well, what type of tile, what type of building.
You've got ahead of the game, Mark, already. Essentially, how do you play this game? Well, your patrician or your meeple will start on this particular thing in this particular seven-sided board. And yes, on your turn, you will move it along one straight line of this seven-pointed star. And on that straight line, you will be given the potential options of four different tiles. And why do you care? Because you are going to be building your own individual estate, and it'll be made up of normal villas or chicken farms or grape fields or swimming pools.
Yeah, bakeries
or banks or a whole bunch of different buildings, and very much in a Carcassonne style, you will want to complete those buildings. And if you make a little building, it'll be worth a little thing. If you make a big building, it'll be worth a big thing. And by that I mean points or resources. You will also have the added challenge of trying, if you want to build those buildings in such a way that gets you maximum points. And that's where we go back to not this big brown smudge that's in front of you, but these lovely green borders, which are modular.
Mm.
Because if you manage to build a structure that matches the structure it wants you to build in a particular series or a particular line of the squares, you might get some bonus points or some bonus gold or some bonus resources or some bonus bread, which is really important. And that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to build this beautiful estate to get you maximum points. And it'll be played out over four rounds. A round will end when this, what is it,
heptagram
of tiles septagram will be emptied. You'll do that four times. In between each round, you'll have some scoring, and that's where these cards play out on the major central board, where you're going to be placing a little one of your tokens, but you don't always want to. Because sometime you can get some good points because they're going to give you benefits for the strategy that you've employed on your own little player board, but you've always got to play one. And when you play a little token, you have to play it between at least two different scoring things.
You'll be able to score two of these cards.
And maybe you can get buku points, a lot of points, but maybe you have to place it in between two scoring areas where you'll get a lot of points on one thing, but on the other side, you haven't done it. You haven't achieved that thing which might be have three chicken coops that are each of size two or have four round structures built or have a certain number of swimming pools or all of these other things.
Some of them you allow you to sell resources and you'll get points and you might be able to sell multiple sets of the same resource. And did we mention there are chickens, there are grapes, there are fish.
Dolphins.
I don't think they ate dolphins.
There might be salmon, but they kind of look like a leaping
there
dolphin.
There might be dolphin-free salmon from ancient Rome. And then there is gold, which is effectively a wild resource, so you can use that instead of the other resources. And then, as you mentioned, there is the bread, where sometimes bread is good, but one of the main things you use bread for is you can pay three bread, if I remember it correctly, to basically say, regardless of what that card says I have to achieve, if I pay three bread, consider it achieved, and I get those points.
Correct, which is remarkably useful. So, yeah, you'll do that four times, whoever has the most points wins. And it's a very simple game, and it plays quickly. And we do need to say a very big thank you. We mentioned him a week or two ago to Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is not normal Richard, who we speak about on every other week, and we know you're listening in the bath, Richard, and that's perfectly fine because baths are awesome.
Yeah, get back to Seventh Continent.
This is Richard from Sydney, who we'd never met before,
who
expertly taught us the game
and
expertly, efficiently taught us the game, so we weren't sitting around for minutes and minutes. It was all done, bang, 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 and then we proceeded to lose with him.
And he expertly schooled us this is how you play the game, this is how we don't play the game.
Correct.
And I think he almost doubled you, I think.
I
came a second.
So, look, this game is very basic. And for a Feld, yes, it is a very basic game, especially for those of us who have played a few more of them.
Hang on. I don't know if basic is the right word.
Simplistic.
Maybe because, you know, there is strategy there.
Of course there is.
So there is obviously strategy maximising how you put down your tiles to score those bonuses from around the edge of your player board, to get the actual bonuses when you put the building together. So to get that dolphin when you finish a pool, or to get those grapes when you finish a grapevine field thing.
Vineyard?
Yeah, that's the one. Whilst at the same time, with one eye on those end-of-round scoring cards and the other third eye on your opponents to make sure that someone else who could potentially go before you isn't going for the same scoring card. So there's a few things going on here.
It's no
Carcassonne in terms of, you know, it's just a jigsaw without knobbly bits. There's more to it than that.
Well, yeah, the jiggle saw,
the knobbly bits, yep.
Instead of being completely random like it is in Carcassonne, you've at least got some choice in those. Because from every point of your gram or whatever it is, you've got eight options at least to start with on the very first turn, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Carcassonne, it's all a complete random chance.
Yeah, and the other thing is, obviously, you do need to keep your estate contiguous. So you, if you see a particular bonus on your player board and then another particular bonus, you can't just drop one tile there and another one way away. They have to be
orthogonally touching. So look, this game is very simple mechanically. And again, Richard, thank you very much for teaching it so very, very well. It must be said that when we sat down to play, it's like, okay, we're playing this. This is a Kenner-nominated game.
Award-nominated game.
This is going to be sexy. And then you see the box and you go, it's going to be great. Then you see the piece and you're going to go,
look, we've got to bring up. So you mentioned very, very briefly the words clip art.
Yes.
This is not a super attractive game.
You know,
we know that I am one who is very fond of fine-looking games. This game is quite bland-looking. The colour palette is really strange. I mean, there's...
If you like green and brown...
I was going to say, there's two...
But can't distinguish between different shades of green that are almost identical... And you like a bit of grey in there for really that little bit of excitement.
You're talking it up now. Ugh. Yeah, there's two sets of tiles. There's sort of like the first half and then the second half. The first half are light green on the back, and the second half are slightly less light green on the back, but not quite dark green.
I think they call them dark green.
Yeah.
But we actually had some people, including I think maybe Leon, come over, and we said, come and see... And tell us, what are the light green tiles and what are the dark green tiles? To which we turned a few over.
Yep.
And it was only when those two tiles were placed precisely next to each other that you could distinguish the light green from the dark green. And there have been, and I've read a couple of reviews, people saying where the gold and the brown buildings that you will be constructing are virtually identical.
Yep.
And it looks boring.
I guess I scratch my head... One, because Stefan Feld, like we talked about at the start of the break, he's done some amazing games, some fantastic games. He's such a talented designer. My impression when we're halfway through this game was, and I think I mentioned it last week, Freedom and Freese's 504, the game of game design where you basically, there are a whole bunch of modules and you can put them together in 504 different ways to make a game.
Maybe.
I felt like someone had played that game to make this game because it sort of had the tiles from Carcassonne, the scoring mechanic from some other different games, the resource collection and swapping from some other different games, and it was like it was all cobbled together. But at the heart of it, it didn't have a heart. It was just like a skeleton with some dregs of flesh hanging off it.
Yeah. It's really... just one of those, for me, meh games. It's one of those games where if someone sits down and says, you know what, guys, I really want to play this game, it's going to be exceptional, I will go, you know what, I'll play it because it's quick.
Yeah.
It's not exciting. It's not fun. How many games have we played where you look at the box and they're staring off into the distance? About a million, billion, jillion. And the only interesting mechanic around this is this little... heptongle thing, the seven-sided doodah,
heptagram, yep.
Where it does give you certainly some immediate strategy and some long-term strategy because that all changes at every round, but it just takes up that 45 to 60-minute time space where there are so many good games, and this is not good enough for me to put that on my shelf.
I mean, potentially people who enjoy a sort of a visual puzzle and the strategic element of it, as we said, looking at your puzzle and other people's puzzle and the scoring cards and the tiles are available and trying to min-max that, maybe there's some enjoyment there. But look, you said it, Garth, there is so many better games. I just scratched my head as to how the hell did this get a nomination, unless, and I know I mentioned this last week, unless the jury are you know, feeling for Mr. Feld a bit, that he's been the bridesmaid a few times.
Well, he has been. He has been nominated for a truckload. So in terms of Spiel des Jahres, Bruges, Luna, Castle Burgundy, Strasbourg, the Year of the Dragon, Notre Dame, Revolt in Rome. Over the last, 13, 14 years...
Yeah.
He's been a perpetual bridesmaid.
Yeah, so either not the recommended list or the nominees. Heaps of other German awards as well. I mean, look, you talk Euro Games, you talk Feld. Like, you everyone do. Knows it's a Feld. People know what that means. Of course, it normally means that point salary type games. And even other designers are doing a Feld. But what I don't understand is, why didn't Feld do a Feld?
Because this strikes me as... not Feld light, but Feld half constructed.
Mm.
It just feels like something that Stefan Feld was sitting in a coffee shop and went, you know what, I like a star. I'm going to make a star a central part of my game. And you know what, I was playing Carcassonne yesterday, so let's include that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been very lucky to talk to designers, and inspiration comes from all facets of life, and that is a remarkable talent to be able to convert inspiration into a good game. And while this is a game, I don't consider this an enjoyable way to spend an hour of my life.
Look, I'm sure there are people out there who would be scratching their head saying, but what about the thing that we haven't thought of? Good luck to you if you enjoy it. That's great. I guess the bottom line for us is it may be a game, but... does it deserve the recognition of even being nominated for this? I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it must be said, replayability, yeah, really high, because you've got the modular bits that'll go around your brown dirt patch. You've got the complete randomization of the tiles every single time you play it.
Yeah.
So there is no shortage of replayability.
And those scoring cards, there are more than what you need.
But if I sit down and someone says to me, do you want to be a Roman patrician building a little bit of a flower patch that might have a chicken coop and a grape in there, and it'll be a little bit different to the last time you played it. It's like, no. Give me Race for the Galaxy any day of the week over
this. I'll tell you what,
Or even give me Baron Park, which is kind of occupying the same space. You're not using a seven-sided whatever it is.
You're trying to
do this, you know, Tetris-style construction, which is kind of in the same vein.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about whether or not
I think we have chewed up more oxygen than this game deserves. Let's come back and talk about the big one, the Spiel des Jahres, the German Game of the Year Award, and those nominees, and get into what we think is going to win. You are here with the Diceman Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
I'm John from Queensland. You're listening to the Diceman Cometh. And Leon really is that good-looking in real life.
Well, there you go. That was the Piranhas with Jirabong is a Hill of Mystery. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. And now Mark wants to talk to us about the Spiel.
The Spiel des Jahres 2019. Now, Garth, the first thing I wrote down when I was making notes about this was this award was first presented... before you and Leon were born.
Wow.
1979.
Hang on.
You were born in 1980, weren't
you? No, I was born in 79, the best 3 months of my life. But before we get to that, for any listeners who weren't sort of listening last week, go back and listen to last week's episode. Listen to our break about the Kenner Spiel, where we voted unanimously Carpe Diem to be the least favourite game.
Yep. Now you will understand why.
Out of Carpe Diem and Detective and Wingspan, and now hopefully it makes a bit more sense.
Yeah, good point. Thank you for bringing that up, Garth. So let's get back to the German Game of the Year, the Spiel des Jahres, and it is very interesting to see how this award has changed over the years. Let me mention some of the early winners. Back in way, way early days, the second game to win the award, Rummy Cub. 1980.
I still own a copy of
it. There you go. 1983, it was Scotland Yard. I still have my copy of Scotland Yard. And do you know, I did not believe this game was this old. 1985, Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective,
wow,
the first edition, won this award. Skip forward a little bit to Settlers of Catan, won in 1995. El Grande, won in 1996. Like, there's a full-on old-school Euro game. And in fact, last week I mentioned, oh, even old school Euros like Kalis have won this game, this award. Well, Kalis hasn't won this award, and I was getting confused between Kalis and El Grande in terms of a proper old school Euro winning the award.
Though they arguably couldn't be any further from similarity. They
correct.
Completely different games.
But Garth, the game you played just recently and you and Carl seem to love so much, Torres,
oh, yes,
won it in the year 2000.
You are suffering from good game, bad company.
Potentially. 2001 was a Carcassonne Odyssey. 2004, Ticket to Ride. And then if I just look at the last 10 years...
Hang on. How do you spell Ticket to Ride?
Let's move on.
T-Y...
2009, Dominion.
E-T.
2010, Dixit. 2011, Quirkle. 2012, Kingdom Builder. 2013, Hanabi. 2014, Camel Up. 2015, Colt Express. 2016, Codenames. 2017, King Domino. And last year, Azul. Now, you can see, obviously, back in the day, it actually was a bit all over the place. You know, you go from a heavy Euro like El Grande to
heavy
Settlers,
Euro,
to
on.
Sherlock, to Ticket to Ride and Carcassonne. But if you look at the last 10 years, those games have been quite on the light side. I mean, even something like probably the heaviest game out of those is Kingdom Builder.
That's exactly what I wrote. Yeah. I wrote Kingdom Builder would be the highlight in terms of strategic gaming.
There you go.
For the last decade in terms of the SDJ.
And in fact, good old Donald X Vaccarino winning with Dominion and then 3 years later winning with Kingdom Builder.
Yep.
He's the only one sort of been able to go back to back. Of course, Bruno Cathala, so many fantastic Euro games, but he won it for King Domino. And you could say the same about Vlad Hvatl, produced so many amazing games, but he won the award for Codenames. And really, those games are pointing you to the direction that the spiel has gone, which is sort of lighter and lighter and lighter. And it's really designed for German families who aren't into gaming, and they would be able to pick it up off the shelf and go, this looks interesting, put it down, spend the night playing it, teach themselves and have fun and go, that was fun. Maybe I do a NASA.
Yeah, and it's exactly true. Just think and put yourself in that, let's not say German family, but just a family space.
Yeah.
Where you're walking through your local supermarket.
Yeah, Target.
And you're about
something.
To go and pay for your sauerkraut or your baked beans or whatever it might be. And there is a shelf of games there. You're not going to buy a game that says plays in 120 minutes. You're going to buy a game where the kids might sort of put in some pester power and it'll play in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And you'll go, yeah, shut up, you know, little child of mine. I'll get it for you and your sister and we'll play it. But that's where the spiel really fits these days.
Yes, that's right. And I guess what they're really looking for is if you recognise that award logo, that sort of gobbledy, meeply looking thing, the big red one with the wreath on it, what they want is, oh, that's that game, and maybe, you know, we bought one of these 5 years ago and now it's time to get a new game, and we know we can trust that award, that logo, as something that a family can sit down and
instead
grandma
of the next,
and grandpa.
Instead of the next themed Monopoly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So now, also last week we talked about the criteria for the award, and as we said at the time, the Kenner didn't really have its own criteria. They used the same criteria for all the awards. Now, to just touch on what they were again, it's they say overall, it's the impression that counts, as we said at the time, the vibe, the enjoyment of playing the game that can't be broken down into individual measurable pieces. But the criteria that help the jury evaluate the game, is it a completely new concept or does it bring existing elements together to create a new experience? Has the concept been realized in such a way as to be engaging to the players? Does it seem organic and whole, or artificial and constructed? Are the rules sensibly constructed, clear, understandable, free of gaps, contradiction and errors? Do the components match their function? Are they sturdy and durable? And is the design attractive? Do the box, game boards, rules and components complement each other?
Correct. And it must be said, especially in the spiel,
yep.
There can't be enough emphasis put on clarity of rules without errors, and probably the number one mistake that we experience, certainly as inverted commas reviewers, is we see games where it's quite clear that the designer has spent so much time with a small circle of people where any question is answered verbally as opposed to in the rules, that the rules themselves are just not clear.
Yes.
It's kind of like when you say, oh, I'll just explain it to you and then you'll be fine, as opposed to complete blind testing, which is, here's a box, open it up and let me know how you go at the end. And we've certainly experienced games which are virtually unplayable for that very reason, where the rules are, yes, they're in English, which is a great help, but it doesn't really matter because you can't actually figure out the game to play.
Yeah. Now, there is there's the three nominees. We'll talk about them in a moment. But there is also a recommended list. The recommended list for 2019, a little game you mentioned that you played in BorderCon, Garth, Belratti, which I admit I never heard before. A game I still don't know anything about called Dizzle. We have our own Australian board game design genius, Phil Walker-Harding, his game Imhotep the Jewel. So that's the two-player standalone version of Imhotep. We have Reef, which I know we have reviewed on the show. I think correct. Leon spoke about that.
Yeah, and I played it at Essen Unplugged in, November last year?
Yep. We have a game called Sherlock Last Call, which apparently there's a set of these games called Sherlock : something, and they're very, very light sort of puzzle-solving game. Not really anything like Sherlock Consulting Detective or 221B Baker Street or any of those games. And then there's another one called Who Did It? And I must admit in saying, what did they do?
Well, you'll need to play the game to find out.
I don't know that one either. But again, very light game. So the nominees for the Spiel des Jahres for 2019 are Just One, by Ludovic Rudi and Bruno Sauter, and published by Repose Productions. Now, firstly, Ludovic Rudi and Bruno Sauter, do you know, well, they've designed a couple of games, but do you know what's the main game they have designed, Garth? And
Purposes of radio, no. What are they?
I've been playing this game for about an hour a night every night this week with my partner Sarah, because it finally arrived last week. Seventh Continent, that behemoth of adventuring and survival. You couldn't get much further away from that to Just One, so I'm quite fascinated by that. Werewords by Ted Allspach, published in Germany by Ravensburger, but we know it's Bezier Games. Now, we have talked about that game so much. Yeah. I think
it was Leon's game of the year.
I think it was in my top 10. We have reviewed it, and we do play it a lot.
We do.
And then the third game, which we didn't know anything about until BorderCon, is called Llama, or in fact it's L.A.M.A, by the famous Dr. Rainer Knizia, and are published by Amigo Spieler. Now, it's got lovely pictures of llamas on the cards, but I wondered, what are the dots for? Because that seems strange. Why not just call it Llama, but then that would have two L's. Llama stands for Lega alla Munich Punkte ab.
I was going to guess that.
Which means put down all minus points, or really it means get rid of the negative points.
Wow, why didn't they call it that?
But of course, let's talk about it now because we played it at BorderCon and it's the one, I don't know if we've done a full-on talk about Just One, but we've certainly mentioned it a few times. Leon played it at his birthday party. We again played it at BorderCon because it is a lot of fun.
All right, well, let's talk about
Llama.
So Llama by the Good Doctor is essentially a small deck of cards, which there are cards numbered 1 through to 6, plus some llama cards thrown in the deck. And I'm going to assume the deck is maybe 49 or 52 cards, about a regulation deck of cards. You shuffle them up and everyone's going to get dealt six or seven of those.
Yep.
The way the game will play is that all you have to do is place a card that is exactly one higher than the last card that was played. So, Mark, if you're to my right and you play a one, I have to play a two. And you go round and round and round and round and round until you get to six. And what happens after that, because there's no seven card, well, you can play a llama. Mm, and that resets it to go back to one, and you go round and round and round. Now, this game is played out over several rounds.
Sounds fascinating so far.
Yeah. It's played out over several rounds, and on your turn, you can do one of three things. You can either play a card, as long as you can, or you can draw a card from the pile to try and hopefully get the card you need, or you can pass and be out for that round.
Mm.
Now, if you play a card, it's quite simple. You just play the two on the three, on the one, or the three on the two, or whatever the case
the
may
next
be.
Next most consecutive card.
To get rid of one extra card out of your hand, because the goal is to get rid of all the cards out of your hand. Or you can draw a card, hoping to get that one that you need. Or if you choose to pass, you will be out, and your score will be revealed when you flip over all your cards. It'll be the all the cards added together of different types. So if you've got three threes, a two, and a one, all the threes are just worth 3 points.
Mm.
You've got a two that's worth two and a one. So you'll have 6 points, and you'll take those in these little token-y things that you get. And ultimately, you want to get the lowest possible score over the course of however many rounds it is, which I think might be three or four. No, it's first to 40.
Yes.
When someone gets 40 points, they lose the game, and that'll trigger the end of the game. So when you play it the first time, or when we certainly played it the first time, you go, ha, 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 this is fun, but it's not really that fun. It's just one through to six, and then the llama thrown in. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Why? Why is this a game?
My first reaction in that first round was, someone's taken Uno, added a llama, and taken the fun bits out.
Yeah, whereas my initial thought was someone's taken Red 7, removed 90% of the game, degraded it down to preschool level, and then said, there's my spiel game.
Yeah.
And that was our first round. Then we played the second round, where we started going, wait a minute.
Hang on a minute.
Wait a minute. What happens if I've got a hand which has three cards in there, and even though I could play a three, I choose not to, because chances are I've got all the threes and there's a big deck there. Maybe no one else will have threes, so they'll have to draw more cards, or they'll decide to pass, which means that their scores are going to be pretty bad, because I'm sort of a bit holding a bit of a bottleneck here. So we did that for the second round. Then third round we went, hang on, everyone's actually having a bit of fun at this game, because everyone else at the table has realised that it's not quite simply, I'm just going to get rid of the cards as quick as I can. There is some form of strategy to this, and we're a table of, yes, experienced gamers, but none of us have played it before. So one player, and it was John, who read the double-sided A5 page of rules. It was itty-bitty, really. And then we went, you know what? There's actually more to this game than we gave it credit for. And we started to have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
So that sort of got us a bit worried, going, you know what, this game actually deserves to be nominated.
It certainly has an interesting decision that happens each turn, which is that, do I take a card? Do I play a card? Do I stay out? Because once you go out, you can't come
You're
back
out for
in.
The round, yeah. And that's exactly right, is that those very simple decisions where we all approach it going, this game is so simple, all you got to do is play a card whenever you've got the ability to. And if you don't have the ability to, then you've got a decision, do I draw a card or do I choose to cut my losses and run? And then we realise that that's not it. You've always got three decisions, because drawing a card, even when you don't have to, is a very potentially effective strategy.
Yep, and that sneaky Dr. Rhino Canizia, who, you know, you may well know, is a doctor of mathematics.
And I feel like he may have designed a couple of games.
He has, that's for sure. But, you know, there is that mathiness of, well, if I've got four fours and a two and a one, that's not that many points. And llamas were they worth seven or more than seven? I can't remember.
They were quite an expensive commodity.
It was really hard to get stuck with the llama, so you really were desperate to get that llama out of your hand. But, of course, if no one's playing cards, you're not going to.
Correct.
So there certainly were, you know, one or two interesting decisions there, enough to make it more than just a Uno or a 52 deck of cards type game.
Correct.
Anyway, let's come back, now that we've talked about it just briefly, and we'll do our little scoring for those three games and see what we come up with. But in the meantime, we will take a very short break.
Hello everyone, your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. Just a quick break in the action to remind you all on how the fun ways you can support the show. You can jump on over to Patreon where you can donate, which has helped us over the last 5 years get to great conventions all around Australia and hopefully internationally. You can give as much or as little as you like. Personally, I would ask, maybe just give us a dollar. I give to about 12 different podcasts a dollar a month. I don't even notice that it's gone, but trust me, they know that it's in there, and if everyone listening to my voice right now gave us that dollar, we would be much, much appreciative. Also, you could jump onto Redbubble and type in Dice Men Cometh and get any kind of merch there that you're after. You can get t-shirts, you can get hoodies, you can get mugs, you can get stickers, any type of size, colours, anything you want. We've been doing them for years, and they are absolute quality. Also, you could go over to iTunes and chuck us a cheeky 5-star review. It doesn't seem like much, but it is the reason how we get our podcast out there to international listeners especially, because those charts put us ahead of things like Google searches and things like that, and it is also very, very helpful. And just follow us all on the social medias. You've got your Facebooks, you've got your Instagrams, you've got your Twitters, you've got all that kind of stuff. Every single bit of it, we put different content on it, so it's not just the same stuff recycled over and over again. And if you want to get in touch with us for any reason whatsoever, you can get in touch with us on those socials or at dicemencometh@gmail.com. We've had many, many sponsors over the years, so if you're interested in sponsorship opportunities for the show or anything to that nature, that's where you can get a hold of us. Now, back to the action.
Well, there you go. That was Dispraise with Clarity. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we have got a few minutes to cut to the chase, really, and go through our SDJ nominees and winners is what we're hoping for, I guess, Mark.
Yes.
Now, Leon obviously doesn't get a choice because he decided not to turn up because he was working or sleeping. So it's between you and me.
Yeah.
Now, we're engaging the same score sheet that you brought to the table and the desk last week.
Yes.
Which are games, we're going to judge them on completely new concept and new experience, engaging concept, all of these rules, are they organic, is it sensible, is it clear, does it look good, does it feel good, all of those things.
Yep. So 6 criteria, we're marking them out of 10, so maximum points is 6.
Correct, Correctington. So, should we start with Llama, which is the game we just talked about, Mark?
Let's do that.
What did you give Llama?
So, I mostly Llama ranked sort of, we've got a 5, a few 6s, a 7 and an 8, believe it or not. The 8 was for rules.
Oh, I gave rules 8 as well, actually.
Wow, there you go. We're thinking on the same page. And my total, 38, which I was actually quite surprised how high I was.
Well, there you go. I gave it 39 because, yes, completely new concept? No. Engaging? Not really. Organic? Rules? Yes. They're very clear. They're very free from errors.
Yep.
However, you still need to read them because otherwise you'll get it wrong. Components? It's a deck of cards.
Yeah.
So it all comes down to cardstock. Is it attractive? Not really. It's got some bright colours. And I think if I was a judge on some form of spiel nominating panel, I would say a box of them on a counter at a checkout looks kind of cool.
Yeah.
So I'd probably say, yeah, it looks attractive.
And the fun, cool llama picture on the front.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Although it is thematically completely disingenuous because what the hell?
It's got nothing to do with llamas. Okay, that is amazing how close we were. And just for those of you following along at home, we're on opposite sides of a desk and we can't see each other's score sheets. So, you know, we're not making it seem close. This is actually blind reveal. So, Garth, you want to tell me about Just One?
Yeah, sure. So, look, for Just One, for me, is it a completely new concept? Not really. It's fun, but it's not new. Is it engaging? Well, it's engaging for me because of the social aspect of it. And for those of you who don't know what Just One is, it's essentially a fully cooperative game. One person will pick a word at random that they don't know what the word is. Everyone else at the table will pick a word to write down, which they hope will mean that the other person will guess that word that they're trying to guess. But if two or more players choose the same word, those words are discredited. Just play it. It's fun.
Yeah.
Is it organic, whole, artificial, constructed? Well, it's kind of dull. Like, it's you could have constructed this game in about 30 seconds, so I'm not going to give it points for that. Are the rules clear? Absolutely. However, Leon Cannon, first couple of times he played it, we didn't know that we were missing rules out until we got to Bordercon and played it again. Components, they're good components. The player little easily things that you have are really good, but again, it's a lot, whole bunch of cardstock. Is it attractive? Eh, looks okay. For me, I gave it 45 of your SDJ points. So, Mark,
yes,
where did you fall into just one?
So, same for me. Very much, you know, got a few sixes. I actually gave it 9 for rules. There you go. Engaging. I thought it was quite engaging, and I gave it 8. And my total was 42.
Ooh, the meaning of life.
Yeah, so there you go.
All righty, last one in for the count. We haven't got much time. Werewords.
So it's werewords. And look, I just found out, if you want to know about werewords, which is a combination of werewolf and 20 questions type thing, episode 215 of The Dice Man Cometh, Leon will tell you all about that
game. That is 50-odd episodes ago.
There you go. Anyway, werewords, it is a new concept, but it isn't. So it's sort of middling rating for that.
Well, it's basically a plagiarisation of a game that I can't recall.
There is that.
Bezier had a whole bunch of, you stole our ideas from.
There is that, okay. It is engaging. You have having fun around the table with the app. Components, I marked it down for because it's basically just some cardboard chips and the app, although the app is quite clever. I didn't think it was that attractive in a design. The rules I thought were quite good. All up, I gave it 40 points.
Ooh, there you go. Well, again, completely new concept. Well, yeah, it's kind of because it drags a couple of things in, and if you haven't played whatever the game is, I can't remember what it's called, which is basically werewords is a ripoff of. Engaging concept, it certainly is more interesting, and especially if you have any enjoyment or history about werewolf at all.
Yes.
The rules, I actually marked it down from this because especially when you get into more advanced roles, you don't just have werewolves and villagers. It can be a little bit confusing when you've got seers and other people involved. Components, I thought they're actually quite sturdy. I don't think they look spectacular, but they are good quality. And for a party game, you want it to last time. You want it to last multiple plays. Is it attractive? Nah, the cartoony weird style of it doesn't do it for me, but I gave it 43. So across the board,
yeah,
I marked everything a smidge higher than you, but that's just because I'm a nicer person.
So Llama?
Llama, 39.
And my 38.
Werewords, 43.
And my 40.
Just One, 45.
And my 42. So unanimously, we think that Just One is going to win the Spiel des Jahres for 2019.
Yeah, okay.
And that's all we have time for. I'm amazed because I would have said, given how much we talked about werewords, I would have thought we would have gone for werewords.
I'm not a big fan. If Leon was here, I reckon our scores would be different. But I also want to throw in a caveat that I have a feeling Llama will win.
Oh, well, you know, the good doctor, he has won a few awards over the year. He does come up time and time again with good games.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.